So would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Alex Craig.
I'm Ian Drennan.
Sam Franklin.
Luca Usmiani.
Now, I do know that half of this band started as a, if you'll excuse the expression, a couple in high school.
Yeah.
I don't mean a couple as in a couple. A couple of lads. And technically, I guess, I'll fill in a few blanks, then we'll go from there. Technically, Ridgewood, New Jersey, but you're officially a Brooklyn, New York band?
The way that Ian and I met is that we were both professional songwriters working for major labels and major publishing companies. And we were doing a lot of songwriting independently for top 40 artists like Taylor Swift and stuff like that. And then our managers for our publishing deals sort of put us together for a collaboration for a song for Shania Twain. And the song wasn't successful, so we were dropped from our deals, but we decided to just band together and start a rock band.
Now, is that true or is that the lie?
That's a wild fabrication.
That's what I thought. Boy, that was really well done.
The truth is that, well, it's kind of a funny story because I was playing in a band in high school. I was probably like 16 years old, and someone from the band was leaving and we needed a new member. And we were at just a high school open mic. We went to high school together. And Ian was playing bass in another band. And our drummer saw Ian playing and just went up to him after their set and said, "Hey, do you want to join my band?" without conferring with me at all. So and then Ian joined. So I always sort of, initially I resented Ian, and Ian thought I was mean.
I didn't know, I knew of Alex at that point because we went to high school together. But I had known of Ian even before Alex knew of Ian.
Where was that exact moment where you, the two of you were there, you were doing your thing and you said, okay, yeah, well, we can do the lo-fi thing. We can do the, you know. When did you say, okay, we want to actually make this a band? A band?
Well, I think that we had the intention of making Big Trouble a band right from the beginning, even with our lo-fi record, even though the process of constructing that record wasn't really... It didn't really involve a sort of band writing process. We always had the ambition of turning it into a sort of full rock performance group.
And I don't know if I'm speaking for myself here, but I think that when the response to the first record started to come out, or even just our early tracks, just hearing over and over someone describing you as lo-fi, or, you know, like hazy bedroom lo-fi, shoegaze, you know, project. But yeah, just the term lo-fi being thrown around so much, it sort of just felt like the last thing we wanted to do was to make another thing that would warrant just more of that.
It's kind of interesting to bring on an icon to produce or mix your record. It's more interesting what happens with the record itself. And when I was listening to the record this afternoon, you know, the thing that instantly happens is this is a big record. And when I say a big record, I don't mean like it's now, nobody sells a million copies anyway. So we're not, you know, what's a big record does not matter anymore. But it's a big record. It's, you know, for a young band that is putting out their second record on an indie label, this is a big record.
I had the idea because I guess one day I think, Alex, you and I were talking about just like dreams of people who could possibly produce records that we would want to make. And at the time I was more active with like my solo music, and I was saying, oh, it'd be so much fun to like make a record and have Mitch Easter produce it. And we were kind of talking about that, and also bringing like Todd Rundgren back to produce a record, but having him use just like all the instruments that he would have used in like the mid to late 70s. Like we went on his site and saw that it was under construction. And so we wondered if he was even still active necessarily, no pun intended, but yeah, you sent him an email, Alex, and you said that he was super receptive to it from the beginning, just because I guess he doesn't he doesn't get as much work as he should down in North Carolina, just because it's kind of, you know,
North Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's pretty much what happened, and he was excited and was able to work within the budget that we had.
The money that we put together total shouldn't have gotten us Mitch Easter, because he's worth, you know, 20 times what we paid, but he cut us an amazing deal, and he didn't, it never felt like he was, you know, treating the project the way that it was being priced at. You know, I think that he just did his best.
And you need a sound, and next thing you know, Chris Stamey shows up.
Once Mitch mentioned that Chris Stamey would be coming by to quantize some of our tracks in Pro Tools, I think we're all sort of just nervous in anticipation of potentially meeting Chris Stamey. And unfortunately, he came by very early in the morning.
It was kind of like Christmas because we all woke up, and there's like this window in the bedroom that we were sleeping in, the bedroom, and it looks out into the studio, and then through another window into the control room. And we all kind of just peered down and saw him working at the computer, and it was kind of just like waking up like on Christmas morning.
So one of the things about having a record like this that is as lush, I'll use the word lush as it is, because again, when I say big, I don't mean big in a bad way, but I mean that it's I like walls of sound. But then you play this live, and you can't play it exactly the same way live, right?
I don't know if they're ready. I hope they're not disappointed when they find that it isn't quite as lush or, you know.
Well, I mean, it could be if you were willing to play with 50,000 levels of Pro Tools tracks on a keyboard, right?
I guess that's exactly what it is, because a lot of bands these days
do
that. And I sometimes that works, but I would hope that people who feel like, oh, this isn't as fleshed out as I want it to be, they're at least appreciating that it's just the four people in the band on stage playing guitars and singing and not, you know, not playing something from an iPod or something like that.
Whatever people are going to expect, you're not necessarily going to give it to them. I mean, because you look at this, right? And I mean, again, back to art, right? It sounds like you do have an aesthetic, not only for what you want the sound to be, but what you want the look and feel of the band to be. Is that kind of, you know, right down to the thing we're not going to talk about, which is the title of the album, because people can't figure out that and put things together. Then do you sit down as a band and say, this is kind of who we want to be moving forward? And have you thought about where you're going to take it at all?
We do. I think that we've recently tried to be more conscientious of our band's aesthetic than in the past.
It's also hard because there are four people in the band with all different ideas of what we want to do aesthetically. So I think that's something that we're trying to talk about. Like,
okay, so take me in that for 15 seconds. So just a sentence or two, I want each of you to tell me, not influencing each other, where you, based on, you made this record with Mitch Easter, right? And it's a beautiful record and it's going to live a while and you're going to tour on it for a while. And then you're going to go, okay, what's next?
Well, I know we're not trying to play the influences game here, but I'm going to just do it anyway because...
No, you're allowed to. I'm just not going to ask it because I don't want to lead you down that path. But yeah, obviously, it's almost impossible to talk about music without referring to music. I just don't want to make that the crux of the conversation.
Well, there's a sort of a general sound that influenced us a lot, you know, probably since we started this band, but we've never really actively mined that set of bands as influences, but I think that the goal would be to start doing that a little more here on from this point on or for the next record. And bands like the Blue Nile or Prefab Sprout or David Sylvian in Japan and Bill Nelson, Ryuichi Sakamoto, Aztec Camera. I mean, I know
this is, but that except for that last band that you mentioned, which came out of a little bit, that's kind of proggy stuff, isn't it? And again, I'm not doing proggy as a genre. I'm just saying as a, you know, commercial versus things that kind of flow a lot more, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, people have tagged it as sophistopop, and because it's definitely complex and sophisticated craftsmanship going on there, which is something that we really aspire to and hope to. Yeah, and you can call it proggy. You should talk to our bass player, Luca, about Prague, because that's where he wants the band to go.
Okay, talk about Prague, Mr. Bass Player. Dung, 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 for about 10 minutes in the middle of the song. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's been like a year-long thing at this point now that I've been really getting into like English Prague, but I've also been interested in like Frank Zappa and Jazz Fusion. And Anthony Phillips record, his first record, which is the original guitars from Genesis. And I wouldn't mind incorporating electronic and also like acoustic Renaissance type guitars in our compositions. But that's just my little Crackpot Fantasy.
I found this, and I'm just going to read it to you in its entirety because this is spectacular. And this is what you're up. The reason we just had this discussion about where you're going. Remember growing up listening to the likes of Pavement and Smashing Pumpkins with a healthy slice of Britpop's Behemoth's Blur? It was pretty good. Those bands helped form and influence numerous imitators, the most recent being Big Troubles. Meeting in high school and self-proclaimed children of the Zeros, they came together to make music like they used to listen to when they were little ones. Have you read this one?
I remember that one.
You know this one?
I remember it.
I want to see if anybody else knows this one. It's spectacular. This Mitch Easter-produced R.E.M. Pavement record begins with playful, luring guitars found in She Smiles for Pictures, an opener which is nice enough, although unlikely to stick in the mind. Misery, meanwhile, contains a dirty bass line which never fail to catch my ear. They can't even type, by the way. Yuck if they lived in the American sunshine. Think yuck if they lived in the American... yuck, yeah, that's sure, that's you guys. Sadly, as the record passes, you begin to notice the distinct lack of originality. Yes, you can hear their influences loud and clear, bold and black and white, but where are hints of this is a Big Troubles track? For instance, blah, blah, blah. Robert Smith-like melody, which, if I'm honest, is to keep you awake. Lead single, Sad Girls Fair, is even worse, sounding like a better-than-average college band taking their influence and regurgitating them, having made sure to digest all the sparkle first. The remainder of romantic comedy follows the same route of mediocrity passing by in the background of my living room while I do more interesting activities like looking out of the window. To go from the excitement of Misery to the sheer laziness of romantic comedy is rather disappointing. Sure, take from your influences, but even if you're not capable of putting a stamp on your own character, at least try. An album, if purchased, will fade into the depths of your collection to be discovered years later while hastily exclaiming, did I buy this? So, Gavin Beavan, music writer, is going to get an email from me. And that email is going to say, I just read your review to the band.
Well, I'm curious of what you think of that review.
I think he's a moron.
I mean, I think that he's entitled to...
I think he's entitled. Gavin, I think you're entitled to your opinion. However, as a critic, your job is to inform. And there's no information in here. All he did is throw darts, but he didn't spend any time whatsoever, you know, saying, well, if they did this, or showing his musical knowledge. He didn't do that.
I mean, I think that he used the same 10 names that like 100 other reviews of this record used. He just said he didn't like it. Well, all the other, I mean, not definitely not all the other reviews, but other reviews say we like it because it sounds like Dinosaur Jr. and it sounds like this and this and this, which I don't necessarily hear, but then other people just say we don't like it.
So Gavin, if your girlfriend broke up with you before this review, we'd just like to say we're really sorry. And maybe you want to go on one of the dating services and get somebody in the whips and chains department. You think that would help him out?
I just think that we got a review on Pitchfork that wasn't exactly favorable, and I just think that a lot of when you get that review that isn't favorable, it's very easy for a lot of people to kind of echo and piggyback that.
So the last thing we do to avoid the Gavins of the world is we do a thing called a musical sandwich. It's two of your songs as the bread and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.